The In Radio Podcast with Dom Chambers.
In Radio. Hello and welcome to the In Radio Podcast, the programme that explores the social value, the value to society and individuals of local radio here in the UK. And that direction of thought, usually and fairly swiftly, lands us in the realm of grassroots and community broadcasting. I'm Dom Chambers, and on this outing of the programme, we are dwelling in a part of the country with an abundance of these kinds of attributes. All the conversations in this podcast were recorded at the National Community Media Conference 2019, which was brought to us, as it does every year, by the Community Media Association, and it took place at the BBC in Media City in Salford. Three of the four conversations I did for In Radio that particular weekend took place in front of an audience and was one of the breakout options for delegates, and actually proved rather popular, so we had to break out of the breakout session. Handily enough, the space we were in was able to remove one of the sides, so we quite literally removed a wall, and the event kind of spilled out into the wider auditorium. We had a great reaction from people there on the day to what turned out to be an incredible range of conversations. Coming up, we'll hear from BBC Radio Manchester presenter Mike Shaft, an extraordinarily engaging presenter just with a wealth of experience and stories. He'd actually been asked by the CMA to launch the conference, and I'm really grateful to him for coming to the podcast and sharing some of those stories with us. Another local also dropped by. If you're interested in the history of community radio, how it came about, what impact it's had, particularly in the Greater Manchester area, and what are the purposes of this burgeoning broadcast sector in the UK's radio landscape, then look no further than Phil Corbell, who joins me on the In Radio sofa and had many stimulating and inspirational things to say. John Dash is another big name in the radio industry. He also has close associations with Manchester, but in our conversation, we're particularly thinking of his role at the Radio Academy, which is the radio industry's own charity. My last guest on this podcast is, I think, the only other person, apart from myself, who has served on the boards of both the Community Media Association and the Radio Academy at the same time. For somebody who fell into local radio by accident, Leslie Puller has some remarkable stories, and our conversation today includes a quick look at community radio outside of the UK and how that impacts on communities, individuals and audiences in what can often be quite problematic environments where human rights is a real issue. All good stuff, so let's get to it. Here are the voices contributing to the Manchester Conversations.
A lovely phrase which I think chimes with most radio listeners is rough but right. Is it rough but right? Has it got that heart and authenticity? Is this someone I can relate to? And not someone who sounds like they're off their face on cocaine or just, you know what I'm meaning. Identikit DJs who've come out of some obscure genetic experiment, you know?
This is the first conference I've been invited to speak at since those days, astonishingly. They didn't like a lot of what I had to say back in those days. There was no black radio stations, some of them just weren't interesting. I worked for Piccadilly. That was a great time for me because I'd wanted to be on the air there for 4 years. It finally happened. I presented a black music show there called Taking Care of Business, TCOB.
One of the great things about community radio to me, and when I listen to, you know, the entries for awards and so on, is just, wow, there are some amazing voices, some amazing storytellers being put on the air. We just need to shout about it as loudly as we possibly can for those people to reach as many people in the future as they will.
Then, of course, there was community radio, so-called, in France. They couldn't understand why we were trying to go the legislative route because they just didn't care. I fisted one down in Provence and they were halfway up a mountain, knocked on the door, and they opened the door and they're blinking shotgun over the door.
We are In Radio.
First to join me on the In Radio sofa was Mike Shaft, and to get our conversation going, I was keen to get a better idea of that journey that had taken him from the West Indies to here in Salford.
I was born in 1968, which is a very long time ago. My father came to the UK soon after my brother was born. My brother's about a year younger than me. And he left to come over here to make his fortune because the streets were paved with gold. That's what they were told back in those days. We're still waiting to find that. He was over here for 10 years before he finally saved up enough money to send for my mum and the two kids to come over here. We came over, he'd got a job. He'd been working for the same company in London for years. They were opening offices in Manchester, and he came up to Manchester, we came up to Manchester, and I've lived in this area ever since, with the exception of about 2 years when I went up to work for the God Channel in Sunderland and Newcastle. It was a Christian organization. I'm a Christian, and I can comfortably say it was once some of the worst people I've ever worked for. And it didn't take me long to decide that if I remained in this job, I wasn't going to heaven. So I got out of there as soon as I can, and we came back down here. My goodness, I've worked just about everywhere. And I don't leave because, you know, I like what I'm doing or dislike it. Things change. One of my favorite jobs ever was the fact that back in the distant past, we won a license in this area to broadcast what was the first incremental station in this country, Sunset Radio. I'd put the group together, been activating for years and years and years. I can say this is the first conference I've been invited to speak at since those days, astonishingly. They didn't like a lot of what I had to say back in those days. There was no black radio stations, some of them just weren't interesting. I worked for Piccadilly. That was a great time for me because I'd wanted to be on the air there for 4 years. Finally happened. I presented a black music show there called Taking Care of Business, TCOB. If you live in this area, it's legendary. I eventually left Piccadilly and very soon after that started at Radio Manchester the first time round, which was back in 1986. I did 3 years there, left the BBC to set up Sunset Radio in 89. I lasted about 2 years as chief executive at the radio station, program controller, the lot, until I was ousted by investors that we'd brought in. I then went back in a paid position, presenting shows and looking after promotions. And then I decided I wanted no further part in that. And very soon after that, it went out of business. It was a great time for me because I built that from the first brick, as they say, to the whole radio station. It was awesome being able to put stuff on the air that hadn't been on the air before. We had things like a Ukrainian hour once a month and that kind of stuff. We had some great programming. During the day, it was very much a black music program. At this time, Phil Corbell, legend of this parish, was doing the same thing in other areas a little bit after we did, and you'll be hearing from him later. But I think that's kind of a potted history.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mike, and thank you for remembering I'm here. I feel like Michael Parkinson. He used to say, ladies and gentlemen, Billy Connolly, and that was the last thing the host ever said. But fantastic to hear your story. A lot of people who work in community radio love working in community radio. That is their ambition, their volunteers. But there are some people, clearly, who are in the community radio sector because they wish to be in other sectors. And so, you know, perhaps your story about how you actually got into radio, because that's always interesting for the young, hopeful and ambitious now. Was it a question of demos and hospital radio and that kind of routine?
Demos, yes. You know, you sent your demos, you took them to station, and it was the same answer all the time. It was a tough industry to get into. It still is. But I'd been wanting to get into radio for years. How it went for me was that I left school. There were only two things I wanted to do. I wanted to join the RAF. I wanted to be a pilot or be a DJ. And the DJs around were people like Emperor Roscoe at the time, who was a sensational broadcaster. I didn't get into the RAF. I wasn't going to get in as a pilot, but I thought I might get in as a technician. I didn't. I passed all the tests, went down to their regional center, passed all the tests there. And the last interview, we don't think you'd fit into the RAF. Years later, I met a guy who was quite senior in the RAF and told him this story, and he says, you didn't stand a chance. We didn't let black people in those days. So was it. I came back to Manchester and decided I was going to be a DJ. And I worked in nightclubs for years all over the Northwest, even did a gig in London, Scotland, And through that, I got a bit of a reputation for knowing what I was talking about with black music. And then when Piccadilly came on the air, that's what I wanted to do. Peebles was there. I knew I'd never get there while he was there. I then, at the end, when Peebles left, I moved into the slot.
Our theme today really is the value to community of radio, of local radio. Now, community can mean, you know, one of many different things, or a hybrid. I mean, it could be a geographic location, it could be a community of interest. You're doing the breakfast show on BBC Manchester on a Sunday morning, and that has a faith context, and you've of course mentioned that you're a Christian. So in terms of your broadcasting career, what does community mean to you, and how are you helping endorse kind of the fabric of community life with your broadcasting?
Well, it's interesting. Terms like community of interest were invented back in the day when we were arguing for radio stations. A community of interest is a group of people who like the same thing. That's the theory anyway. It doesn't have to be geographical. So for instance, I ran a radio station online called New Sunset Radio. And we were on DAB in Manchester. After about a year, after the experiment completed, they offered us 5 years. And I said, thanks very much indeed, but I don't want it. Unless you can give us a decent size footprint. What we were trying to do was to be a specialist radio station. Now, I could come on the air and play pop music all day long and get an audience. I have no interest in doing that. I play black music. I play a specific type of music. Now, I said, if you gave us the same size as a Piccadilly, then we would then, our 10% of that would be worth something to advertisers. 10% of the size of that you've given us means nothing to an advertiser. So that was a difficulty. In the end, they said, no, they weren't going to increase it. I said, thanks very much. We don't want to keep the license. And I gave it back. Radio is fantastically important at any and every level. And it's about telling people's stories. Listen to people when they speak. Don't jump in. I listen to Radio 4 a lot, and sometimes I'm embarrassed. The guest would be giving an answer, just getting to an interesting point in the answer, and then in jumps the presenter with another question before they've had a time to answer the last question. That, to me, is absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. I want to hear the guest and what they have to say on something. I'm not interested in what the presenter has to say. And that's how I run my Sunday breakfast program. When I have a guest in the studio with me, the most important person in that studio at that time is the guest. And if you take one thing away from today, just think about this the next time you do an interview. Let people talk. And if they go on, just move forward like that. And they know that you want to say something. And more often than not, you do that, and they bring their conversation to an end, and you can get back in.
In Radio, conversations with Dom Chambers.
Talking with Mike and hearing about his passions and what drives him as a radio presenter was a really awesome experience. Not least because it was fantastic talking to somebody who shares my passion for using radio as a medium to transport people's stories. Inevitably then, I wanted to know if Mike had a story that illustrates what the listener can expect from his show. It comes as no surprise to find that he had one to hand.
I get there on Sunday, and one of the guests is a guy who's just won an award by The Message. Does anybody here know what The Message is in the Manchester area? Great organization, and they're a Christian organization, and they go into jails. This is just part of what they do. They go into jails and help people come to Christ. They go and live in difficult areas. They get a house in a difficult area, send a team there, and try to bring the community together. They do fantastic work. They have an award ceremony every year. And this guy won an award for his story and how he's changed his life, and won the overall award for the best story. I asked him to tell me his story back in the old days, and he said his life started off very difficult. Both his parents were alcoholic. He would come home from school, and his mum would be laid out in the house, sometimes on the path outside the house, drunk as anything. He says, if he didn't cook, they didn't eat. And he had, I think it was four or five elder brothers. He was the youngest. One of the elder brothers was a drug addict, sold drug. And very soon he was taking drugs, selling drugs, the lot, ended up in jail. Came out of jail, met the message while in jail, totally turned his life around. And talking about stories, we want our story, want to hear that, but we want to hear what turned him around and how his life is now. And his life is fantastic. He works in a house owned by the message, and he's the chef in that situation. It is an absolutely beautiful story. And I tell you this, we get stories like that each and every week.
BBC Radio Manchester's Mike Shaft there, talking about the kinds of stories you hear on his Sunday Morning Conversations show. And indeed, I'm grateful that he found the time to be part of the In Radio Manchester Conversations. As I was talking to Mike there, he actually mentions my next guest with some level of reverence and respect, which is echoed in my thoughts with somebody I've known for a few years and have always enjoyed working with. And much of that enjoyment lies in the fact that we share so many common beliefs in how radio and radio training can improve not only society and communities, but the very real prospects of participants as they progress with their own lives. What I hadn't realised until this conversation with Phil Corbell is that we'd both started out our radio careers with a passion for music. And while that passion remains undinted, we discover a whole new value to the radio process. What, I was keen to know, had triggered his own radio journey.
It's very simple and as shallow as wanting to be John Peel. That was a while ago. That's why I fell out of print media into radio to play loud guitar music. So I wanted to be John Peel. The BBC, Radio Manchester again, made the mistake of offering me the platform to play angular and distorted guitar music and the like. But then dance music arrived. We were in the thick of the Manchester explosion, doing an alternative music show on Radio Manchester. It was insane. We didn't realise how insane it was at the time. We just made radio. It was great. But that was a journey mainly into speech-based features across the network. And then it was a weird thing of making a programme that changed my mind. I ended up producing a documentary about two people riding a tandem across the world, and I got cassettes. Remember cassettes, folks? Mm-hmm. I got cassettes from the Four Corners, and it made me realise that I didn't want to be reporting on this, and I actually did that and took a tandem to Australia and rode the thing back. And if you do any sort of journey like that, it rewires you, and I came back rewired and, of course, got straight back into making radio. But an opportunity came up to establish an independent production company. A guy called John Burt was asking us to do that as experienced producers, freelancers. I resolutely failed to get any commissions from Network, and rather than fold the thing, we did everything else we could do with audio, which included training. And we established Radio Regen, the charity, in 1999, a full 20 years ago. How the hell did that happen? 20 years ago, we established Radio Regen as a diversity type project to broaden the input of people into mainstream media by getting them making community radio. And then the prospect of full-time stations came up, and we ended up running the largest of the access radio pilots in 2000. And that was the instigation. We rapidly moved off from the talent pipeline. And it became a thing of itself. We had one trainee, Marie Chapman, from Miles Platting in East Manchester. She said, "Bollocks to the BBC." That's sort of nice to say that here. "I don't want to work for the BBC. I want a station on my street corner. I know the empty shop unit we can do it in. And it'll sound like this." And it had absolutely clicked in her head of what this community radio thing could be. And at the time, we were talking about temporary stations. We became part of the Access pilot. .. And after setting up three of the full-time stations, All FM, Withenshaw FM and North Manchester FM, handing them over to the community at different stages, Radio Regen became the community radio toolkit, basically, enabling people to learn from the many mistakes that we made. And that's what we've been doing ever since, raising the capacity of the sector to deliver social gain.
What was the point that you realised that radio could have that higher purpose. And obviously that led to the launching of Radio Regen.
So you make radio and you think it's about what comes after the speaker. But funnily enough, it was actually the first programmes I was making with other volunteers at the BBC that you'd see the difference it made to the people making. It's a weird thing as someone who gets into radio out of a sheer passion for making radio to realise it's not just about radio, or it's not what comes out of the speaker and the value of that. So seeing the change in people, starting to train people and seeing the change in those people as that thing about self-esteem. Our alternate slogan for Radio Regen is almost, that's me on the radio, that is. And that's not about ego, that's about self-development. And that idea that anyone and everyone can and should be doing this was very much the start of it. And then seeing the impact on communities of long-lasting stations particularly. We did an RSL in East Manchester in a since-demolished community centre. Five lads turned up from an East Manchester high school. We gave them the absolute crash course, but they did an hour live. They absolutely aced it, went away on such a high, these five lads. It was only afterwards their teacher said, oh, yeah, they're all on report card. You know, you've given us five would-be thugs to work with. And they were amazing. And he said, it's turned around their attitude to their future. It's a transformative life experience. So you've got that around the value of participation and then the impact of voice on the air as well. All those events and organisations that you can transform their fortunes by amplifying them. So this just captures what I think is the true value of what we're doing. Was anyone at the Community FM conference that we did where we had Zain Ibrahim from Cape Town in the room? A real inspiration. Someone said, how much of community radio is community and how much of it is radio? And he just grinned and said, 90% community, 10% radio. A whole bunch of radio people went, oh, that can't be true. But actually, you can argue about the percentage, but I would absolutely go with the priority. As someone that came from radio, the value in every sense of what we do stems from community. It's also the most difficult thing. And as a radio person, I had to unlearn so much of what I thought it was all about. Actually, the crucial thing was about community and learning how to build a thriving social enterprise. And of course that relates to the radio that you make, but so much of it is about what we're calling the true value of what we can do and monetizing that as well. That's absolutely crucial. So it was one of those mind shifts that you had to do around one phrase, 90% community, 10% radio. Yeah. And the other thing he said in terms of output and your standing in the community was, don't be popular, be necessary. And again, it was one of those lovely counterintuitive statements where you go, of course we want to be popular. No, hang on, if you're necessary, that transforms your relationship with your audience and your community. He talked about the times on the Cape Flats where the station was, where they'd have a missing child, they would suspend the schedule until that child was found. That's what they would focus on, citing that child. And it worked because it was the place where people went to when those things happened. I think we all bemoan the blanding out and the homogenization and the conglomeration of the mainstream, but certainly that presents an opportunity for us as well as a community service. So we were talking about speech before, and again, how many of us have got into this malarkey through our mad enthusiasm for music? Actually, we have to think about it, the distinctive thing, the really valuable thing. Anyone can play music in their shed. The valuable stuff for us, I'm convinced, is speech, and it's not hard.
Phil, you've described, I think, the purpose of community radio in its original conception. You were part of the access that led, obviously, to form the legislation that created licensed community radio in 2003. The radio landscape has changed hugely in the intervening period between then and now. the homogenization that was predictable perhaps in commercial radio, but has gone much further, really, than anyone might have been able to predict a decade or so ago. That's sort of changed how a lot of community radio stations are perceived as the local radio station, perhaps even replacing previous ILRs, as they used to be known. I mean, how do you see that progression? And it seems to me that there is not a division in the sense of antagonism or different positions, you know, different ways of going about it. But how do you see those community radio stations very much branding themselves as the local radio station and those other community licenses that are really very much focused on that kind of original concept and that sort of impact that you've touched on?
Does that make sense to folk, that sort of particular sort of two schools type thing of some stations are more about being a mainstream sounding, local, and the others a bit more diverse in their output, maybe. I have strong views about it in that I veer personally more to the latter. The station that I'm still on the board for is All FM, and I know it'll be a shock, but I actually have someone who cuts my hair sometimes, and she's a massive fan of All FM. And I said, well, what do you like about it? She said, I've no idea what's coming up next. And I love that because it's authentic. And it's that authenticity and variety that's completely distinctive. And she's completely addicted to it. Now, I'm not saying you throw the baby out of the bathwater. And my goodness, some of the stuff that ends up on All FM, I tear my hair out at. A key word is authenticity. And you can have that from anywhere. If you're going down a more mainstream route, please don't playlist the thing into blandness. Keep enough speech in there to be authentic and represent your community. And at the other end of the extreme, please bear in mind there are people that might not know who you are and where you're coming from. So a bit of branding, actually remembering to say which station you're listening to, that stuff, you know, that's important too. Authenticity, absolutely right. Don't get too hung up on production values after a certain point. Yeah, it comes back to authenticity. People will forgive any amount of and stumbling a bit. You know, a lovely phrase which I think chimes with most radio listeners is rough but right. Is it rough but right? Has it got that heart and authenticity? Yeah, is this someone I can relate to? And not someone who sounds like they're off their face on cocaine or just, you know what I'm meaning. Identikit DJs have come out of some obscure genetic experiment. You know, it's please, you know, if ever there was a place to make value out of authenticity and originality, it's us and our sector. Now, that's in our sound, let alone thinking about the value that we can get from that.
Phil Corbell, stimulating and entertaining as always. But in all that experience and in all those stories he has, I wanted to see if there was one particular anecdote that illustrates the power of that sort of grassroots approach to radio that he's such a strong advocate for.
I always remember the first police officer we got on air literally would come off his beat, do his show. He'd take his stab vest off, but keep his radio on, seriously. But he loved his show because when he went out back on the beat again, which is what he did, it changed the conversation. It changed his relationship with the people he met on the street. Mainly people saying, will you stop playing that heavy metal? It drives me up the... You know, it would be a bit of banter that would open a conversation that he'd never otherwise have. So it's that potential, particularly for agencies, to change their relationship with their publics that I think is absolutely crucial and a really undersold value of what we do. So changing those relationships, enabling people to hear officials of whatever sort without their uniform or suit, as it were. They come across as a person who likes bad heavy metal or whatever it is. Yeah? So I think it's transforming that. And he also said that the station was a center of community like none other. And he knew his patch well. So it's a place where they could connect to individuals and organizations in a way that they couldn't do anywhere else.
In radio with these Manchester Conversations is really hitting the upper echelons of quality, which is good because as we ascend to that sphere, we come across one of those radio names that bubbles up and generally percolates throughout the industry. John Dash has a radio CV that is so long he requires his own mini rainforest to create the paper to print it on. So it's rather a good thing that we've hit the age of digital, which makes it rather appropriate that I use the occasion to ask the Vice Chair of the Radio Academy what he thinks about the future of radio and audio, driven by that powerful undercurrent of technical change.
The industry in general, it just moves so quickly. It's really difficult sometimes to get your head around what's happening. It's almost like if you leave to go on holiday, you go to Spain for 2 weeks, you come back and something else has changed. It's changed so quickly. If you look at the radio brands, and I'm not talking about the Capitals and the Hearts or anything, those that are on as many platforms as possible to reach as many people as possible are the ones, in my eyes, that seem to be getting somewhere for the future. I think we should be on small-scale DAB, we should be on FM, we should be on the smart speakers, we should be online, we should be on every opportunity there is to reach the maximum number of people across any demographic with the message that you want to put out there and the people you want to reach. It's a scary time. It's a very scary time. Only the last night, I was having a drink with somebody I rarely see. He's 33 or 34. And wow, what a promising guy in radio. He started out in Leeds. He ended up running a student stroke, community stroke training course in Leeds. You know, he was one of the people that myself and a few friends said, that guy is so switched on. I won't give his name because he'd be listening. He'd be so embarrassed. He knows who he is. But I remember thinking, you know, that's it. And when we do 30 Under 30 and these initiatives that Radio Academy does and others, you try and find these people and you try and help because you give them an opportunity to say, look, you know, it's difficult now, so let's try and get you somewhere. And he left. There was nothing for him at all. Nothing. And now he's an incredibly accomplished guy in another industry, but he's running communication. And he absolutely adores radio. We were meant to meet for an hour last night for a beer. 4 hours later, of course, we're still talking, you know. And his passion for radio hasn't dimmed, but the industry, very sadly, is lacking him and many others. And that's what I worry about in the future. One of the great things, and I echo what was said earlier, one of the great things about community radio to me, and when I listen to, you know, the entries for awards and so on, is just, wow. There are some amazing voices, some amazing storytellers being put on the air. We just need to shout about it as loudly as we possibly can for those people to reach as many people in the future as they will. But I do believe things are cyclical. I do believe that, you know, Capital, Hart, Bauer, they're all doing what they do, and they do what they do very well to make the money they make. Absolutely. I have no problem with that. However, things are cyclical. And the world becomes bigger and bigger, and people then look to their local communities or their communities of interest even more over time. So I'd never be too negative about it. I'm a glass half full guy anyway, but I'd never be too negative. I think you do great stuff, and it will find a way of reaching the people you need to reach.
You set out in a career in radio, and many people in this room and here today have done that. You've touched on this, but If a young person in their teens, for instance, came to you now and said, John, is this a good industry for me to get into? Is this a good idea? Or, you know, or echo conversation with my own father back in 1990, say, well, how many Tony Blackburns does the country need? And I said, well, just mercifully one. Yeah. But, you know, he said, well, Dom, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. I proceeded to go and buy a basket, buy the shop out of eggs, and shove them all into that one basket. And mercifully, things worked out, but not in a way I expected. I wanted to pat Tommy Vance on the back and say, thank you very much, Mr. Vance. Now, please make way for me on the microphone. And I spent many years practicing to sound like Tommy Vance, and only to discover that, you know, a bottle of spirits every now and again, a packet of Gitan was a good route. Anyway, don't try this at home, please. Let's go back. Young person comes to you and says, is this a good industry for me to consider as a sort of professional progression? What's your answer?
Number one, it depends on the person. You really need to get to know them. You need to understand what their motives are. If they just want to be the person who goes on the radio pretending to be an imitation of somebody else, then go. You know, a line was used to me about a month ago, and I loved it. The listener will never prefer a better version of you than you. So people who try and be something they're not will never succeed on the radio. Never. Because people can see through it. The listener wants to hear that word earlier on, authentic. One of the things I found amazing this year, at the Radio Academy, we had a record number of entries for 30 under 30, which was a big surprise, considering where the money side of the business is. Record number. But then I looked through them, and they were astonishingly good. I looked through them, and I realised out of the, 600 entries or whatever it was, I got the numbers wrong there, but out of that number of entries, there was a relatively small percentage of people who only worked for one organisation. In fact, most of the 30 that came through this year that were recognised as being the 30 under 30 work for not just two, three, sometimes four different organisations. We used to say that you had a job for life, that was years ago, and you get a little tankard at the end. Then you say, you change jobs halfway through your career. And then we said that you have multiple jobs over a number of years. What seems to be coming through to me is that people under the age of 30, certainly as far as my experience is concerned with this, have multiple jobs from the very beginning. They're working for lots of different organizations. So would I say to somebody, yes, this is a great industry to go into? Yes, I would, but I'd need to know an awful lot more about them before I recommended it to them.
John Dash, talking to me as part of the Manchester Conversations recorded at the Community Media Conference in Media City. And at one point, the conversation moved on to the increasing journalistic credibility of what is going on in the development of community radio. And as this subject was making good headway, John refers back to some of the ideas Mike Shaft was talking about in terms of interview technique. And that, as you'll hear, leads to the memory of a great radio journalist and an initiative planned by the Radio Academy.
Journalism, as we heard earlier on, is about holding people to account more often than not these days because of the fake news that's out there and the unbelievable way that fake news can look increasingly real. So you've got to have a certain skill. You've got to be able to hold those people to account and be able to read those situations and translate them on the air. I think it was Mike that said that earlier on, and I thought he was absolutely spot on. I've heard a number of people, particularly in the last couple of months, on community radio who do an amazing job of that, of holding people to account, not interrupting them necessarily, just holding them to account. I think there is a future for it, but I think the ancient and sometimes well-respected craft of journalism has become part of what we do on radio. I also just quickly want to mention one other thing. The conversation earlier on was about how people interrupt during questions. There was a journalist a number of years back at the BBC who was the journalist's journalist. His name was Nick Clark. I don't know if you remember Nick. He was a very, very accomplished, professional, personable, polite, well-researched interviewer. He could get to the crux of a matter unbelievably well, but he was never rude, and he never cut across people. He tragically died very, very suddenly, and the Nick Clark Award was set up by the BBC. That award is now being transferred to the Radio Academy so that we can open it up to anybody in radio. It was perceived as a BBC thing before, which is fine, you know. But the family of Nick are pleased that we're going to do this. And we will celebrate the polite, well-structured, well-researched, well-thought-through, well-mannered interview. And I think in this day and age, with some of the things we've seen in recent times, that's the thing to be applauded.
In Radio Conversations with Dom Chambers.
And so, to the last of the In Radio Manchester conversations. And it was my real pleasure at the Community Media Conference to meet Leslie Puller, whose involvement with both the CMA and the Radio Academy predates my time with both organisations by some years. Now, the section of conversation that I've chosen ensures that this particular podcast ends in a place that emphasises that whatever we do radio for, whatever its social value, and all the things we love to discuss and talk about, it has, if nothing else, to be about fun. And I love the way Leslie weaves the conversation around to that. But the clip opens with us talking about community radio at an international level. And I was asking what the organisation AMARC stood for.
That's the World Association of Community Radios, founded in Canada, French Canada, and we had conferences in different parts of the world over the year. From that, Steve Buckley and I set up AMART Europe, and that was great. So we had a European forum, and we would meet regularly, and also because there was interconnecting funding opportunities for different countries, then that would enable that, bringing them together.
I was with Steve Buckley in Paris for the 2015 UNESCO conference on community media, representing the Community Media Association as its chair at that time. And one of the abiding thoughts I had emerging from the conversations I'd had there in Paris is that community radio and grassroots media, if you like, can mean slightly different things in different parts of the world depending on the context. So in this country, we tend to think about its impact on communities, on empowering people with voices, of course, the impact of the training on the opportunities for the individuals involved, and of course a whole exciting tier of grassroots media in the landscape previously and exclusively occupied by the BBC and commercial media sectors. However, if you're in a part of the world where human rights are still an issue, perhaps, you know, the economies are emerging, and a different sort of principles and ethos around free speech, community media can have a whole higher value that perhaps we take for granted in this country. Have you got any thoughts on that?
The Cubans used to come to our conferences, AMART conferences. We always had Cuban translators, and we had a lot of South American people, representatives from groups around South America, and they were living in turmoil. And stories that they used to sing the news because they weren't supposed to tell the news. Things had to be hidden in these sorts of ways. Then, of course, there was community radio, so-called, in France. They couldn't understand why we were trying to go the legislative route because they just didn't care. And I fisted one down in near Provence, and they were halfway up a mountain, knocked on the door. We were lost, actually, trying to find our way to a place for the conference, driving, and knocked on the door, and they opened the door, and they're blinking shotgun over the door. Why? Goodness knows, but this was... And some of them were very militant, which isn't always what we do in Britain.
But it is perhaps the French way on occasion.
Exactly, exactly. And so you learn a lot. I think I certainly realised actually how very fortunate we are. We abide the rules mostly. We're not restricted to huge extents. It allows a lot of self-expression. And it isn't just about working with disadvantaged people or with it. There's a fun thing. You want your community to think of you as their friends. You know, I mean, where I worked in Thamesmead, tower blocks that people never came out of their, you know, rooms, we were their friends every, you know, when they switched on their radio and they had people they could ring up and talk to and this sort of thing. So there's different things, but we didn't think of it as being, I suppose, a big sort of social problem that you had to deal with. It was just being radio. I thought it was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. I fell into it each time. Oh, no, I couldn't do that, and got into it. And I had a wonderful time, really wonderful time.
I think having a good time, enjoying yourself, we possibly do underestimate the value of that, because that's one of the, and probably the greatest driver in what sends volunteers into community radio stations up and down the land. And I always say in the radio station I run, if you're having fun whilst building skills and contributing to the fabric of community life, then that's sort of job done, really, isn't it?
Well, it is, and they laugh at me sometimes because I always end up and say, don't forget the fun, because it should be. You're not there to be worthy all of the time, only some of the time, and hopefully you produce some stuff that is meaningful and helps in certain directions. Obviously, those are sort of serious sides, but there's the other side. And you want to have, why should we all be so serious all the time? And I think of us as a family. And one of the things I used to say is, look, come to our meetings. There's no point in your sitting in different corners of the country reinventing the wheel. You have a family here. Come, somebody else has already done it. Talk to each other and learn from them, because that's what happens in a family. And I'm glad to say that I think it continues. We're a family and we're learning from each other, as well as doing good work and having fun.
Good work and having fun are fine sentiments that underwrite what all of us who are working in the radio industry are trying to, or indeed should be, trying to achieve. I'll leave the idea of good work done to your judgment, but I've certainly had a lot of fun in making this podcast. Many thanks to Leslie Puller, John Dash, Phil Corbell, and Mike Shaft. And for the BBC's generosity in providing the venue for the Community Media Conference 2019, and the Community Media Association for putting it all together and inviting me to host the In Radio podcast as part of the day. I can tell you that plans are well underway for the Community Media Conference 2020, which will be at the University of Bedfordshire in Luton on Saturday, the 27th of June. So that's one for the diary. For now, though, that's it for this edition of the In Radio podcast. I'm Dom Chambers, and we'll do it all again very soon. In Radio.